And we're live. What's up, everybody? Thank you so much for joining. Today, we were meant to have a conversation with Muhammad, but he actually just informed me that he cannot make it. Everything is okay with him. All things considered, he's just having internet issues. He can't connect to the internet from his home. He messaged me using 3G. So that's the state of his internet currently, not enough to do a live stream. We will reschedule the stream with Muhammad. Hopefully sometime this week, I'll post it on all the relevant socials. We'll still do a stream today. There's always stuff to talk about, always updates to give. There's actually been something I've been wanting to do. There's so much misinformation, and some of the biggest influencers talking about Israel-Palestine, are cringe, right? They don't understand what they're talking about. They're trying to be relevant, but they're making like just very bad points. And B, there's just a lot of misinformation. So I think what I'm going to do, I'm just going to go through different Twitter accounts and do some debunkings. Sorry guys, Muhammad won't be on today, but hopefully later this week. If chat has any questions, happy to do that. Hey, Sarah, I see you over there. Great to see you. And obviously, if anyone wants to support the show, you could find ways to do that in the description, or you could click the join button right here on YouTube and become a member. Cool. And let me know which accounts you want me to debunk. I have a few in mind. I'll try to get some pro-Israel accounts, some pro-Palestine accounts. We're going to debunk everybody. Everybody's cringe these days. Every last one of them. Who do we want to start with? How about Syrian girl? You want to do a little Syrian girl debunking? She's really probably one of the worst voices on Twitter, if I'm going to be completely honest. And here's the thing. While I'm going to debunk all these accounts, While I'm going to debunk all these accounts and just give an honest review, all these people, every last one of them, are welcome on the show for a conversation. You know, obviously, that's what we're all about. So if you happen to be watching the debunking of yourself, feel free to reach out. Let's have you on. Let's have a conversation, because that's really the best way to resolve our differences. And again, I'm not debunking people just because I disagree with them. I'm debunking people who are spreading misinformation, either intentionally or not, and who just have uninformed views of the conflict. So Syrian girl, I don't know if you all know her, but she's probably one of the biggest peddlers of misinformation and just irrelevant. Like her analyses are just so like shallow and lacking nuance. So here she starts. Out of nowhere, ISIS have reemerged to fight the Syrian army in the desert. They serve Israel. Right. So here she's spreading conspiracy theory. You know, one way to look at it is, you know, Israel needs help, so they call on their friends ISIS to fight the Syrian army. Okay, that's one theory. But if you really want to be intellectually honest, you could bring that up as a potential, but there's often a simpler explanations, right? Generally conspiracies are not the simplest or most obvious explanations. They're just ones that fit preconceived notions people may have. So right now Syria is essentially in a weakened state because there's been multiple attacks by Israel attacking different targets, not too many. There's turmoil and unrest in the Middle East. This is a pretty logical time for ISIS to try to get some kind of military and strategic gain. And that's even if this happened. I didn't even check that this is actually happening. But let's say it happened. There is another explanation. But obviously, someone like Syrian girl isn't going to express that other side. Kashmir's asking if the Gazan friend didn't show up. No, his internet's out. He had to message me on 3G to let me know he can't make it. And he will try to come on later this week. But he did let me know that he's all in all doing well as he could be. Let's continue. I mean, these are dead children. Assuming this is a real video, it very well may be. I mean, the toll on civilian and on children has just been tremendous on the Palestinian side, and it's horrible to see. So I have no disagreement with her trying to shed light on that. Here's a retweet. I'll go through Jake Shield stuff because he's also worthy of debunking. So here she's doing a video, a photo before and after. The Jewish ISIS don't bring tanks, they bring bulldozers. So first of all, I'm not even sure this is a before and after. This might be very different areas of Gaza. Most likely it is. There's no strategic advantage to actually destroying all of these palm trees and all this here. It's just wrong. You know, there's some military advantage to having bulldozers, but tanks are even more beneficial. So she's just making shit up right now. Let's see. I won't do retweets. This is here. It's a Palestinian soldier being abused, which is absolutely horrific. And any IDF soldier that abuses a Palestinian should be put in jail and then discharged from the military. Just straight up. Like there's no question about that. There's no debating that. Let's see. She has a lot of retweets. I'm not going to do it. Here's a video of, so she posts a lot of videos that just, we don't even know if they're real or not. And she has zero interest in fact checking. And we'll get to some of those videos. So again, I see this on her page. Everything she shares, you should take with a grain of salt because she just has a history of sharing things and then, you know, just to fit whatever narrative she's pushing. Here she's talking about four Israeli soldiers that were killed. Four demons have been sent back to the depth of hell after tripping a booby trap. I mean, there's no misinformation here. It's just cruel to talk that way about anybody, honestly. But in all fairness, you know, many Israelis would say this, would speak this way about Hamas members. So this is not unusual for somebody to talk, you know, celebrate the deaths of their enemy. So let's read this one. The word Israel will forever be synonymous with genocide. Nothing is ever going to be the same for anyone calling themselves Israeli. The door is closed on two-state solution. It's closed on a one-state solution. A zero-state solution seems inevitable now. She never supported a two-state solution. She never supported a one-state solution. This is what she's always supported. So making it seem like all of a sudden this is now it's proven to be what's going to happen. Again, she's just trying to, it all comes down to just trying to prove whatever her preconceived notion is on the topic. And there's actually no reason to think that what's happening now, as horrific as it is going to cause Israel to cease to exist. It's not based in reality like most of the stuff that she says. I'll take a quick break because I see some questions. Dio Brando goes, to be honest, Israelis don't seem to desire a one-state solution. It appears they prefer to remove the Palestinians. Let's face the reality here. Well, I mean, the first part of what you're saying is 100% true. Israelis definitely don't want a one-state solution because they have zero vision of what a one-state solution could look like, where they would still remain safe on the land. If we want any solution, it's going to need to be one where that provides justice for Palestinians and where Jews can feel safe. And a one-state solution in most configurations just will not allow Jews to be safe. Now we could get into a federation and versions of a one-state solution where that can happen. But Israel's lack of desire for a one-state solution doesn't come from a place of malice. It comes from a place of self-preservation. And they prefer to remove Palestinians. I mean, they would prefer to remove Palestinians from the land than be dead. That's true. Again, it all comes down to self-preservation. People generally value their lives and the lives of their families over the lives of their perceived enemy. But Israelis have shown a willingness to compromise time and time again, and given the right conditions, they will compromise in a way where Palestinians can have their own version of self-determination side by side with Israelis. Even now, recent polling came out showing that only 20% of Israelis think we should build settlements in Gaza. So you have that 20% of the population, which very much has an expansionist mindset and wants to take as much land as possible. But 80%, the overwhelming majority, have no interest in expanding territory. For them, it's really all about security and ensuring Jewish survival on the land. Matthew Strelitz asked the million-dollar question. Hey, Adar and Soha community, what's the best sites accounts for understanding whether some info video is going around is legit or misinformation? This is such a challenge. There's very few sources for this. I will shout out one account, Tal Hagen. He's a regular on the show and a friend. He tries to debunk and make sense out of everything. I actually have a meeting this week with a few other guys to try to launch a site that is actually going to be a truth-telling site. We may even have some AI component to try to make sense out of things. So we're working on it. But aside from Tal Hagen, you know, I'm just, you know, it really requires investigating each case, each claim on its own. And just one rule of thumb is if you hear something that comes, it's an officially Israeli announcement from the Israeli government or military, take that with a grain of salt. If something comes from Hamas or any Hamas government agency, take that with a grain of salt. Both sides and any side in conflict have an incentive to lie and a history of doing so. So look for things that are independently verified. That's your best bet. And there's just a lot of things we just can't know. So it's better to acknowledge ignorance and know that we just can't... We can't know everything, but what we do know is that an atrocity, even if we don't know the extent of the atrocity on October 7th, we know that an atrocity took place. Even if we don't know the extent of how horrific the situation in Gaza is right now, we know that it's horrific, right? So we don't need the full truth to be able to reach conclusions. Okay, Hovav says, good to see you, Adar. Could you give some general red flags to help us spot propaganda, false information for both sides on social media, especially with pictures, videos? Yes, yeah, so I guess I kind of answered this to the best of my ability. It really is hard to tell. You know what? Maybe I'll compile a list of accounts that I think are more trustworthy than others. But the truth is the vast majority of the big, most popular accounts are just peddling in misinformation. They do very little verification on claims they make. They're going to blindly trust the side that they support. And, you know, clearly that's not a sound and intellectually honest way to go about things. And good to see you here, Kay Havov. Let's see what else we got. We'll go back to Siren Girl in a moment. So Dan, you asked a good question. If most people are against the settlements and it's a democracy, why hasn't it been stopped or even reversed? Just anti-democratic right-wing political maneuvering in Israel. It's more so it just hasn't been a big enough priority for most Israelis. So there's a difference if you ask somebody what they think about an issue and they'll tell you if they support it or not, but will it be top of the list and will it be something they campaign for? Or will it be an issue that will determine who they vote for? So I think it just hasn't been enough of a priority. And a lot of the reason why it hasn't is because it's not like, even though many Israelis would acknowledge that the settlements are a barrier to peace, it's not like removing settlements or stopping to build settlements will by default solve the conflict. And most Israelis don't know really how to solve the conflict. So if Israelis are presented with a vision for a solution to the conflict, and that would involve dismantling settlements, then you'd see Israelis be able to rally behind that. They're not going to rally behind something that not only, you know, it's politically unpopular. Like, it's not popular to build in settlements, but it's also not so popular to, you know, uproot people from their homes. So you're not going to get a lot of support for the dismantling of them if there's no vision beyond that. What percentage of Israelis do I think support a one-state solution? If you're talking about a one binational state, I'd say it's probably around 15%. Because keep in mind, 20% of Israeli citizens are Palestinian citizens of Israel, and a lot of them would like a one state that's binational. If we're talking about just Jewish Israelis, it's probably lower than 5%. All right, let's go back to Syrian Girl. Let's just see some more stuff. Yeah, no, she's sharing a lot of stuff. It's just hard to know, like, I don't have time now to fact check and look at all the videos she's sharing and seeing if they're real, but very well maybe a lot of what she's sharing just isn't relevant. The cancer needs chemo and radiation therapy. That kind of sounds like she's calling for a nuclear attack on Israel. Or am I reading this the wrong way? Okay, so here's just a clear example. She reposts the lie that 39 Palestinian infants have died. It got community noted that they weren't died. They were just in threat of dying. And obviously this is a horrific situation, but you would think somebody right there that, you know, somebody who is actually trying to report on information would see that new information comes out. She made a false claim here. So instead of either deleting the tweet or correcting herself, she'll just keep it up and continue to get impressions. She doesn't care for truth. So yeah, she posted this video, and here's just so you can see how much she lies. Israel admits Apache helicopters fires on their own civilians running from Supernova Festival. First of all, it's called Nova Festival. She just added the super, but we'll let that slide because it doesn't really matter. This is just a blatant lie. Israel never admitted that they fired on people running from Nova Festival. This video is Hamas militants trying to cross the border. And Apache helicopters did shoot on anybody crossing the border. Is it possible some of those killed by the Apache crossing the border were civilians, were hostages? For sure. But they made it seem like the massacre at Nova, which accounts for, I think, 300 civilian deaths. She's trying to paint it as if it was Apache, where there's actually no proof that Apaches fired on Nova. So blatant lie gets community noted. And then she retweets it saying, malicious community note with Zionist lies. This is not false. And she talks about the date, how she was right about the date, but she doesn't acknowledge that she completely made up the fact that it was at Nova Festival, right? She's just a propagandist. Here's another one community noted that she didn't delete. Oh, yeah. Okay. So here's another one. Israel's best sniper was sniped by an average Hamas sniper. This is made up. Like, Baribi Ariel is not a real person. It's not even an Israeli name. You know, so again, just the fake post. She didn't look into it if it's real, but she has no problem sharing it. Many pointed out that it's a made up person. And of course, she'll just leave it up. This is just, you know, how she functions. Okay, let's do some more questions and then we'll get back at it. So Bas al Ulema, how do you explain IDF helping wounded ISIS fighters a few years back on the border with Syria? And can you elaborate a bit more on the Abu Hafs, a.k.a. Benjamin Ephraim case? I'm not familiar with the Benjamin Ephraim case. Can you share that with me, please? In terms of Israel's policy with helping Syrian rebels, including al-Nusra Front and potentially ISIS as well. So I actually served. I was a reservist on the Syrian border during that time and got to see it firsthand. Israel did have a policy that it would support the Syrian rebels and whatever factions they were aligned with. This includes ISIS and Al-Qaeda, the Al-Nusra Front, which is an Al-Qaeda faction. Their strategy was simply, we want to destabilize Syria. We want Assad to lose because we want the Hezbollah, Assad, Iran alliance to break. So it was a strategic decision to help Syria lose. Does this mean Israel likes ISIS or wants them have strength in the Middle East. No, it's a specific support to achieve a goal. And certainly one can criticize it and say it's not the right approach. And we shouldn't work with an organization like Al-Qaeda and ISIS, even if it's to achieve our goals. That's a legitimate case to be made. But what many people conclude, they say Israel created ISIS. They do so to destabilize the Middle East and to help them kill civilians, right? There's often a way more logical and simple explanation, but people take it to this far out place just to help them, just which helps support whatever preconceived notion they have on an issue. But yeah, that did happen. I don't know if it was any direct contact with ISIS. I didn't see that, but I did see that there was a direct line of communications with Syrian rebels for sure. Relius asks, what was your take on Nasrallah's speech? I found it to be peaceful, found it to be drawn out and boring, but he needs to learn how to be more concise. If I'm going to give him some feedback, it was just an hour and a half of nonsense, but I think he's in a tough situation because I think there's a lot of pressure on him to join the war and support Palestinians and support Hamas. But the Lebanese people don't want war. He probably doesn't want war. He doesn't want the devastation that, you know, it will inflict on Hezbollah and the Lebanese people. So it was like his way to show strength, show support for Hamas, without actually doing anything about it. And there is fighting between Hezbollah and Israel right now. I just spent a week in the north, and every day you hear boom, boom, boom. It's not throughout the whole day, but there's a few hours every day where you hear bombings. It's Israel carrying out airstrikes and artillery on Hezbollah, and then there's rocket fire. Even today, some people were seriously injured in Israel by an anti-tank missile shot from Hezbollah. So there's some back and forth, but it's definitely not full scale. And it's a good thing that it's not full scale, because that would be just a very tragic escalation. Kashmir asked, Adar, do you believe it is ethical to democratically vote to evict a person from their land? I would need some context, but generally speaking, no. I think that, you know, we should not uproot people from their homes. That's a pretty good rule of thumb. Can I be presented with an instance where I could see it being okay? Yeah, perhaps. I think it's not so black and white, but in most instances, we shouldn't be uprooting people from their homes. My view on the humanitarian pause is, I mean, I think it's great. I think the more we can do to help civilians in Gaza, the better. If it slows down military advancement or takes longer to defeat Hamas, whatever it may be, all that is well worth it. The toll on civilian life has already been tremendous and heartbreaking, and anything to slow it down or stop it, I would support. Okay, back to Syrian girl. Let's see. Yeah, so here, you know, Israel posted something that got debunked, and obviously she has no problem to retweet a debunking if Israel makes it, but when she gets debunked, she'll just pretend like it never happened. Again, here she's talking about the 39 dead babies. Didn't happen. Community noted, kept it up, no correction whatsoever. She doesn't care. It's funny because pro-Israel people spread the 40 beheaded babies lie, and now Palestinians are spreading the 39 babies in incubator lie. So we have more in common than we think. Yeah, I mean, this is just hard to see, obviously, when you see the toll on civilians. It's heartbreaking. here's a claim that Kim.com made that just seems to not be substantiated at all, but obviously she has no problem to peddle it, fits her agenda. Imagine an ethnic version of COVID that only infects Arabs or Chinese with a 50% fatality rate. Israel and the U.S. government have been working on this for decades. China and Russia have recently raised the alarm that the U.S. government is developing ethnic bioweapons. So this is literally a report from 1998. If it hasn't happened, it's probably not going to happen. It's probably made up. It's probably bullshit. So here, Al-Shifa Hospital is older than Israel. That's possible, but it'd also just be made up. You just never know. If somebody wants to fact check when Al-Shifa Hospital was founded, just for the sake of seeing. Is there anyone still supporting Israel at this point that isn't Jewish or Hindu Vita? Can't seem to find any. Yeah, sure. I mean, many Christian conservatives. I mean, there's, it's certainly, we're not, most people are pro-Palestine, but, you know, there's clearly more than just Jews and Hindus supporting Israel. See here, she's still flipping out over the fact that she got community noted and zero self-reflection or acknowledging that she was wrong. Here's another one. Whatever happened to Delta Force who sent to Gaza? Douglas McGregor said they were all shredded, but Biden has been completely silent and we never heard about it again. We should be able to identify obituaries given their faces were exposed, right? This is like, whoever Douglas McGregor is, he said something. It's not proof. Delta Force almost certainly was not on the ground in Gaza. There's no reason for them to be. But, you know, Syrian girl doesn't really care. Yeah, this was painful to see. The 90-year-old grandma needing to flee her home. That was tough. Okay, let's see where we're at. Let's see if there's more questions. Yeah, a few more questions. We'll take them, then we'll continue. In your view, how can we reach out to Palestinians in the midst of war, and should Palestinians assume some agency and try to get away from Hamas clutches? Yeah, well, that's a great question, Nicole. Social media is a great way to reach out to the other side. If you want a connection with the Palestinian, I'd personally be happy to make one, so you could reach out to me. You could find my information and reach out to me on Twitter or Instagram. You can find that in the description. But social media is a good way to do it. I've made some friends just through reaching out to people on social media. And should Palestinians assume some agency? 100%. This is something that Western activism really, I feel like, is missing. There's this very binary framework of oppressor versus oppressed. And the way they look at it is the one who has all the power or most of the power has all the agency, and those who have no power, less power, have zero agency. There's this kind of like infantilization of those deemed oppressed. But a good rule in life is no matter what your situation is, no matter if you're the victim or not, there's always something you could do to better your situation. And this whole idea that the only person who needs to change or should do something is that who has the power really disempowers those who are already disempowered. So whatever situation you're in, no matter how hard you have it, there's always something you could do to improve your situation. And this framework that's presented by this like Western social justice movement is, no, you can't do anything. You're oppressed. Don't worry, they'll change. Once they change, you'll be liberated, right? Never wait for others to change for your conditions to improve, because there's no guarantee. The only guarantee is for you and your ability to take action. So yeah, there's a lot. Palestinians should always have agency, even when, not even when times are rough, especially when times are rough. So yeah, for sure. Imagine a person using a mortar to fire from their home towards yours and your only means of defense is an artillery piece. Will you fire to save yourself, knowing nearby innocents can get hurt? Well, this is essentially Israel's strategy, right? Hamas very much embeds their military infrastructure into Palestinian civilian infrastructure. I mean, just the fact that there's a battle in a hospital right now, right? Like, why is there a battle in a hospital? Why there shouldn't be Hamas militants in a hospital? And it's not just Al Shifa Hospital. There's many hospitals that there's been battles over, that there will be battles over, because that's where Hamas concentrates a lot of their militants. It's strategic for them to do so, right? So that they have a clear military incentive to do so. If all of their military infrastructure was just located in one area, it would be very easy for Israel to just destroy it, unless it was very deep underground, but that's much harder to do. So they build it within military infrastructure. It makes it much harder for Israel to destroy. And when Palestinian civilians are killed, it's horrible PR for Israel. So they have a lot of incentive to do this. And Israel makes a decision that if Palestinian civilians need to be killed for our military gain, then we will do so. And that is essentially the law of proportionality, right? There's I'll read exactly what the rule says. This is international law. The rule of proportionality requires that the anticipated incidental loss of human life and damage to civilian objects should not be excessive in relation to the concrete and direct military advantage expected from the destruction of a military objective. The problem here is this is very subjective, right? Like, who's to decide if damage to civilian objects is excessive in relation to the direct military advantage? I think most would conclude that Israel's use of force is excessive compared to the military advantage. But again, they're saying if we defeat Hamas, then obviously civilian death toll is going to be worth it, because it's gonna save future generations of death. Right. So the international law in this area is very much up for interpretation. So it's an interesting law, and this is really how Israel views and justifies the loss of civilian life. There's a clear military gain, because with the civilians being killed are Hamas militants and military infrastructure. Kashmir says your moral ethical system should be independent of so-called international law. I agree completely. I agree completely. There's a lot of debates over international law and does Israel break it or not? We mentioned it here and there on the channel, but we've actually never dedicated an episode to it because it's just personally less of an interest of mine. Because international law is not upheld. So even if a country breaks international law, generally nothing's done about it. And B, laws and ethics are not always aligned. So I've never really been one to care much for law, even in my own personal life. I'll say it right here on a live stream with potentially thousands of people viewing it. I break the law whenever I don't feel like following the law, as long as I'm not harming others. It's all good. Arrest me. Do something about it. That being said, you know, there is reason for law. You know, it does keep order. It, you know, it's not for no reason, but some laws should be broken, like cannabis use, and not should. Weed isn't for everybody, but if you want to get high and it's illegal, get high. If you want to jaywalk and you're not putting yourself in danger, jaywalk. All right, there's probably a few other things that I'd say you could comfortably, a few other laws you could comfortably break. Yeah, this is a good point. Chiroro, good to see you back. I haven't seen your comments for a while, and I still can't pronounce your name, but people seem to think international law and specificality, the laws of war, some sort of peacenik code of conduct requiring people to sing kumbaya. In reality, things are rather cruel or legal. Yeah, it's really saying how to kill people in a nice way. Justino goes, Netanyahu made it clear the Israeli goal is to reoccupy parts of Gaza, and he's saying this. His goons are saying it, and Israeli soldiers are celebrating at the former colonies of Gush Katif. Yeah. So let's really talk about Israel's long-term goal here. I don't think it's clear. I think Bibi has an interest to drag this out as long as possible because he keeps saying, Israel's military and intelligence failure on October 7th will be investigated. People will answer for their mistakes, but now we're at war. And he's responsible. And by the way, 75% of Israelis say he's unfit to lead. This is by far the highest it's ever been. It seems like Bibi's done. But the longer he could drag this out, he's, I think, hoping that Israelis forget and forgive and he could retain power. I think this is his goal. In terms of what he means by reoccupy Gaza, it's unclear if what he's saying is hold military control of Gaza or actually start building settlements. My guess, and I hope I'm right about this, is that he means military control and not settlements. That would just add to the disaster. If any good can come out of the bloodshed we're seeing, it's that the status quo has changed for the better once all is said and done. And starting to build settlements in Gaza is not going to be an improvement to the status quo. I mentioned this earlier, but a recent poll came out saying only 20% of Israelis support building settlements in Gaza. So there's no political will to do it. Also, Bibi most likely will be out of power. Benny Gantz very well may be the next prime minister who's a centrist. I don't think he's going to be building settlements. So I would say it's, again, no guarantee, right? But it's fair to conclude that most likely there won't be building of settlements. And I don't think Israel has an interest to hold on to Gaza militarily for long because it's expensive, not only costly, but also costly for human life. Israelis are, you know, every Israeli soldier killed is felt by all of Israel. You could look them up on social media and see your mutual friends with them. So Israelis don't like being in prolonged conflicts when soldiers are killed. I don't think the will be there for holding on to it. It's all a question of what the exchange of power looks like. How do you do it where there's no vacuum that is filled with another militant organization? So is it given to the Palestinian Authority? Unclear. Is it given to some international peacekeeping forces? Unclear. Is there some other government can rise up? I don't know. I personally think maybe it's time to release Marwan Barghouti from jail, have him be the Palestinian Nelson Mandela, and have him lead Gaza and the Palestinian cause to a better future. Colin Simon says, what does IDF know about Hamas tunnel systems? Do they know what they're looking for walking into? I don't know the exact number, but there's at least hundreds of Hamas militants who were captured on October 7th and the days after. So they've gained a lot of intel. So I think they have a lot of information on the tunnel systems, where to find them. What they're walking into, I'm not sure. Tunnel warfare is extremely dangerous, extremely bloody. I don't think Israel is planning on doing it. And here's really the challenge, right? Israelis are unified in wanting to return the hostages alive. I don't think we're taking the right approach to return them alive, if I'm to be blunt about it. I think we very well may not return them, and it's very sad to acknowledge that. But they say that a lot of the hostages are in the tunnels, right? So generally, instead of fighting the tunnels, there's an idea, just collapse them. But would Israel collapse the tunnels with the hostages inside? I don't know. It's possible. It's not, that wouldn't be a popular position to take, right? Israelis would be quite furious if the hostages are killed by collapsing the tunnels. What do you think about major influencers blindly supporting either side without logic and spreading misinformation? How can they be debated when the damage they do is done already? Yeah, this is kind of what we're dedicating this episode to. I mean, because Israel-Palestine is so popular, every influencer feels the need to have an opinion. They want those clicks. They want those impressions. And it's a very complex conflict. Extremely complex. It's very hard to have an informed opinion if you're not well-versed on it. So the majority of influencers are just taking positions that are kind of shallow, don't always add up. You could tell they don't really know what they're talking about. And many of them are just peddling in misinformation. So it's a challenge. I think, you know, Twitter and community notes helps a little bit, but it's definitely not a perfect system. I mentioned earlier, I'm meeting with some people this week to talk about a truth-telling website that may use AI to help make sense out of everything going on. But it's very, very well maybe AI is the solution we need to this, the war of misinformation we're facing. And yeah, so I don't have a good solution. I would just urge people to not, you know, if you see a claim, see where it's coming from, try to verify it. And if you don't know, better not to say anything than just pretend to know. If something comes from Israel, the Israeli government, take it with a grain of salt. If something comes from Hamas, take it with a grain of salt. That's the general rule of thumb when nations are in conflict. Cool, let's continue. Should we follow, should we do some other influencers? So Syrian girl is the biggest Assadist. She really loves Assad, which is interesting. You know, she's very harsh on Israel for the butchery in Gaza. But when Assad was butchering his own people, she was supportive. She, in that instance, was able to see how it how civilian deaths were okay if the military gain is defeating a rebellion, right? Here she goes, if Hamas was truly using human shields, as Israel claims, it would put one Israeli prisoner in every hospital, but they don't. How does she know? Right, that's just like, she's just saying shit. She has no way of knowing whether that's true or not. And I think the human shields thing, I think there's a lack of understanding. When the claim is made that that Hamas uses human shields, they're not saying that they actually take Palestinians and shoot behind them. They're talking about the fact that their military infrastructure is built intertwined in civilian infrastructure. This isn't even debatable. We know this to be the case. So that can very well be seen as a human shield. Here she said, talk is cheap. That's right. And so is tweeting misinformation. Here's another one. He's in the same camp, Suleiman Ahmed. Just another peddler of misinformation. He's like he was a big Andrew Tate supporter, and now he's moved on to Israel-Palestine because it's what's popular. But deboosted and demonetized for speaking the truth to power. Actually, you were deboosted and demonetized for spreading misinformation, right? A little self-reflection can go a long way, buddy, but sure, just blame others for your failures. Yeah, that's tough to see. For those sensitive to these bloody images, I apologize ahead of time. Here she's claiming that the IDF opened fire on people fleeing. There's no proof that this was actually that this actually happened. Just another unsubstantiated claim. You see, it's funny how she's a huge supporter of Neturi Karta, who's the anti-Zionist Haredi Jews. But she doesn't really know anything about them, what they actually believe, what their views are. They're probably very different ideologically and politically, but here they align, so she says they're godly men. I'll tell you where they probably don't agree on politics. Actually, I don't know enough about Syrian girls. She's pretty cringy, but they very well may not agree on women's rights. They very well may not agree on Jews' role in this world. Like, you hear a lot of anti-Semites talk about Jewish supremacy, and they talk about the Jews who have power, like the ones who are in Hollywood and finance and media, and they say these are Jewish supremacists using their influence to control the masses. But those Jews in power are generally secular, many of them atheists, don't have supremacist views. The ones who are more likely to be supremacists are these ones right here, actually. And it's not supremacy saying, I don't want to speak to it because, I've a fair bit of the ultra-Orthodox community, I've heard them say some. It's not so much talking bad about non-Jews. It's more so about us being the chosen ones and us having a special place in this role. So it's not, doesn't come from a place of hate as much as just feeling elevated. But these are, for her, the godly men. Okay, let's go back. We'll take some more questions. Then we could go to another account. Akash Gazadar, imagine if Hamas took over an Israeli hospital full of Jewish people. Would you support Israel bombing the hospital and calling it collateral damage? Would you be okay with that? If not, why not? I think you're misunderstanding. I have not really expressed a single opinion on the bombings. Well, not on this live stream. I'm sharing how people perceive it, right? I'm, in this instance, more interested in both sides better understanding how each side reaches conclusions, and the rationale each side gives. I think that Israel's force right now is unwarranted. I could see them. I can see reason for wanting to destroy Hamas, and I could see great advantage to it. But I think that the level of destruction we're causing civilian life, it's very hard for me to justify something like that. So to answer your question, now to just go deeper, how many Israelis would answer your question who do support what's happening in Gaza? People generally value the lives of themselves and their loved ones over those of their enemy. I don't know where you're from or what your ethnic background is, or if you come from a place in conflict, but you could apply this to yourself as well. Did most Americans value the lives of Afghanis like they did Americans that died in 9/11? No. Generally speaking, people don't value the lives of others. Not even if it's not an enemy, they don't value the lives of others to the same extent they value the lives of those close to them. This could even be seen on a more local level. Let's take the United States, for example. Let's say you live in California and there's a wildfire and people a few miles away from you are dying. You might not even know any of them personally, but because they're so close, just a few miles away, that really, really hurts you. If there was a wildfire on the other side of the country, let's say upstate New York, it wouldn't bother you nearly as much. Both Americans, right? Could be same ethnic background, same religion, ideologically similar. Just based on physical proximity, are how much we value life changes. And this is true across the board. So again, you could call out an inconsistency here in how we view human life, but this is consistent amongst all humans across the board. So it's important to we should be idealists and like have an idea of how we want the world to be, but we should also grapple with reality for what it is and understand humans and how they act in given situations. Israelis value the lives of Israelis more than Palestinians, significantly more. Palestinians value the lives of Palestinians over Israelis significantly more. Not even debatable. No question about it. And it's not hard to understand why. Justina says, you don't think we should focus on Sierra Girl. It's not productive. We do not know who this person is, and there are real people on the ground providing us with so much more insight. So could you share accounts you think we should follow? But no, I think Syrian Girl is one of the most popular accounts on Twitter. We will follow other ones as well as pro-Israel ones, but I think it's very okay to call these people out for spreading misinformation. If just a few, so for example, after we finish this live stream, one of our volunteers is going to take this and clip it up just to the Syrian Girl debunking, and we'll name it Syrian Girl Debunked. And people who follow Syrian Girl very well may find this video and be like, oh, wait, maybe I shouldn't believe everything she says, right? So this commentary certainly can have an impact. Promix.me goes Adar and Palestinian, and as much as I'm happy the conflict is brought to light, why do you think as Israeli the world is paying all this attention and hate to boost to both sides versus... Yeah, why does Israel-Palestine get a disproportionate amount of attention? I've thought about this quite a lot. First of all, countries that are part of like the U.S. sphere of influence, so if they're like Western countries, they're seen as more relevant. Israel is held often to a higher standard, right? So if Assad kills people, it's not if Assad is killing Palestinians, which he killed thousands during the Syrian civil war, you don't hear about it. But when Israel does it, you hear about it. One factor to that might just be that, you know, Assad is not funded and supported by the United States, whereas Israel is. So a U.S. ally that's heavily funded by U.S. tax dollars should be held accountable when it's committing atrocities, right? So that's a reason why Israel might get disproportionate attention. I think there's also a sexiness to it. I think you know, like the Holy Land, right? It's really been like the center of the world for thousands of years. Endless conflict. You have Jews fighting Muslims over this land. There's a sexiness to it. And I also think it's fueled by anti-Semitism as well. You know, you have people who really don't give a shit about Palestinians, but they definitely don't like Jews, and this is an opportunity to attack them. And here's how you can see it. Like, you have these anti-Semitic accounts that they generally don't care about human rights. They don't talk about the weak. They don't care about the powerless. They don't generally care when civilians are being killed, unless it's Israelis killing Palestinian civilians. And that generally should be seen as a red flag. And I'm not quick to just call people anti-Semitic. I think, generally speaking, many Jewish activists are making a huge mistake with how liberally they use the word. They label people anti-Semitic. It not only dilutes the meaning of the term, getting people to not take it seriously, but it also distances people away from Jews and from Israel. So I think it's an entirely counterproductive form of activism, just label anybody you don't like anti-Semitic. And we see something similar in the racial justice movement and in the gender movements, right? Like, calling people transphobic is very common, and calling people racist is very common if you speak against what the official narrative is. So it's just all in all in a counterproductive form of activism. If you disagree with somebody, don't assume the worst about their intention. Don't label them something demeaning, and talk to them, right? Understand why they believe what they believe. Challenge them on the merit of their ideas. Try to reach common ground. This will almost always be a more effective strategy to changing people's minds. Very, very rarely somebody says Israel is committing genocide, and somebody might respond, you're just an anti-Semite. You've convinced nobody. Not a single person is convinced by that argument. But they might say, you know what? I'm not taking accusations of anti-Semitism seriously anymore because it's just overused. So stop it. Stop with that shit. Soul, of course, Adar, your army is the most moral. Yeah, I don't know about that, buddy. And I don't know why you think I believe that. You know, I sometimes wonder, I see comments commentating, like responding to things I say. And I'm trying to be very self-reflective. So feel free to call me out if I'm doing something wrong. But some people really just are assuming these positions about me based on things I never said, and I wonder where it comes from. So I wonder if I'm going wrong somewhere, or if these people are just so stuck in their own head or worldview. And even when I say something quite sensible and quite fair, they're interpreting it as completely different. So I am open to feedback, but I really don't understand where your comment's coming from. So Nathan Campioni, what do you think about the claim that Israel is partaking in genocide at the moment? So, I mean, just based on the definition of genocide, I don't think this fits genocide. I think you could call it disproportionate power and a mass killing or mass even murder of civilians. I'm okay with that framing. And I'm not even going to be a stickler and push back on people saying genocide. But generally speaking, genocide has intent to destroy a population, right? So genocide, the deliberate killing of a large number of people from a particular nation or ethnic group with the aim of destroying that nation or group. So Israel is constantly accused of genocide, but the Palestinian population has quadrupled since 1948. Israel has the means to commit genocide. They have not been effective at it because that's probably not their intention. What Israel certainly has done and is still doing is ethnic cleansing, right? So Israel has committed ethnic cleansing and is still committing ethnic cleansing. That would be the proper term. I think genocide is just a really harsh term that people use for sensationalist purposes, or they just don't know the definition, but it's not really using the term accurately. Ron the Red is asking, is Syrian girl pro or anti-Assad? She's pro-Assad. Bax is asking, am I pro one or two states? So I would be pro any solution that really answers the desires, needs, and aspirations of both people. So for Jews, what is really essential is their security. Jews won't agree to any solution where they can't ensure being safe. And Palestinians, for them, it's really about get a sense of justice and freedom, right? Being able to self-determine on their homeland. So there's different solutions that could achieve that. I think generally, like the idea of one state, one person, one vote, one government, I personally think that would end in disaster. You have two distinct populations who have different ideas for what their state should look like, who have been in conflict with one another for 100 years, who have a tremendous amount of fear and hate of one another, suddenly living in one state, competing over control of one government and one military, will most likely end in disaster and more bloodshed than we've ever seen in the history of this conflict. So I don't think that's a good solution. I think a two-state solution would be preferred to that, but I'm leaning more than anything towards a federation, which is a form of one-state solution, but it's not just one government. You could have a system of checks and balances. So for example, you could have a Palestinian government, you could have an Israeli government, and then you could have a dual government that's comprised of both people. The land is split into many different cantons or states, giving populations more localized control. So you don't have people who are different from one another competing over control of the federal government, but just working more locally. This would also very, very well may solve a problem within Israel between secular and the ultra orthodox. So I think a federation seems to be the most viable. Unfortunately, it's just not popular. People aren't talking about it yet. But we recently had someone on the show who is one of the architects of the federation solution. So you could search in the search bar Solha Federation, and it'll come up. He presents it quite clearly. Matthew asks, Adar, do you believe Israelis can feel safe without neutering Hamas? In the short term, no. But I do think that... So I'm under the belief that the only constant is change. That's not even a belief. I mean, we know this to be true. So is it possible that there's a future where, let's say Hamas isn't defeated, but we could one day, they could be legitimized and worked with? That's certainly within the realm of possible. It's hard to see that as realistic currently, but look at the history of conflict. You have had terror organizations become legitimized and then run governments. It's not unheard of. It's possible here. So given an evolution of Hamas, I think it's possible. And, I'm by no means a Hamas supporter. Anybody who knows me knows that. Generally speaking, I don't like murderous governments, and I don't like theocratic governments either. And also because I care about Palestinians, I know Palestinians are not fans of Hamas either, generally speaking. So this in no way comes from a place of love or support. And I don't even know why I need to preface that. Most people know this already, but they evolved their charter in 2017 to be way more moderate. Again, you could just say this is a facade. They're not like legit about it, but we did see an evolution in their charter with actually quite progressive stuff in it. It still calls for the destruction of Israel, but they talk about like equality on the land and human rights and all this interesting progressive stuff. And in 2006, when they were elected to power, they actually reached out to Israel for the sake of some kind of negotiation and, you know, working together. And Israel had just outright rejected it. Now, would this have been successful if Israel started negotiating with Hamas? Very well may not have been. I can't confidently say that would have been an effective strategy, but it would have been better to try and fail than not try at all. When they were elected, we just saw, you know, a terrorist organization get elected. We're going to put a siege on Gaza and, you know, we're now at war. I think we should have done everything in our power to try and rather try and fail than not try at all. And I think that's where we went wrong. Ron the Red says, will this war end soon? I don't know. Honestly, not likely. Not likely. There's a lot of political will for Hamas to be defeated. For Bibi Netanyahu, this is his only way to save face after the biggest failure in his long career of failures. He will do everything in his power to defeat Hamas, and it's will take many months for that to be the case. LEGS, hi Dar. How does the average Israeli see the genocidal rhetoric from their government calling Palestinians human animals and Amalek, saying that there's no innocent civilians in Gaza? I think because there's just so much anger right now in Israeli society, they're just not bothered by it. They accept it. With that, it's not like the average Israeli is cheering on civilian deaths. Right. If you were to poll Israelis, do they support the operation in Gaza? The overwhelming majority will say yes. If you ask them, do you support genocide of Palestinians? Again, I can't know what the number is, but it probably wouldn't be more than 10%, which would be up from, like, let's say 3% prior to October 7th. So the Israeli population has been radicalized without a doubt. Even those on the left support what's happening in Gaza now. So, yeah, conflict radicalizes us, which is one of the reasons why war is so bad. It brings us farther away from one another rather than bring us closer. Every Palestinian killed, every Israeli killed, radicalizes the population, makes us less oriented towards peace. And this is also why those for calling for the destruction of Israel are doing nothing but aiding in the radicalization of the Israeli people, making a solution harder to come by. Activists around the world, rather than working to destroy Israel, they should actually work to transform Israel. And that is the strategy that many Israelis will work with them on, right? So Israelis are actually big on changing their government. We had 8 months of protests every week for 8 months. Tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of people rallied for change. Israelis will go to the streets to change their government. They won't go to the streets to destroy their country, putting them in danger. So those around the world who want to support the Palestinian cause, you could do that by working with Israelis to transform Israel to be a country that is easier for Palestinians to accept. And the work that Palestinians need to do is come to terms with Israel's existence, because Jews living on the land will not consent to any solution that will put them in grave danger. And the dismantling of the state will do just that. What I think Israel could have done to be less violent. So again, this comes down to proportionality. When Israel's conducting airstrikes, there's a consideration. There's a military goal And then there's the collateral damage. Their level of proportionality, I think, can be significantly less. For example, if they have an ability, this is a hypothetical, but things like this come up all the time. Let's say they know they could kill two Hamas militants, but in doing so, they'll maybe kill a family of 10. They very well may say, we're going to do it. That is the decision that they don't need to make. So changing their level of proportionality is one way to reduce harm to civilians, which will take their goal of defeating Hamas much longer and potentially may also lead to more IDF soldier death. So, you know, that's why they're not likely to do that. But the world very well can make that demand of Israel to have a greater consideration of the harm caused. You know, and the counter, people say, yeah, when war, civilians die. How many German civilians died in World War II? Was that genocide or was it necessary, right? So this is how many people are viewing it. But that said, it's still Israel makes a decision when they're dropping these bombs. They know civilians are going to die. They're making consideration, and their level of proportional harm can certainly be modified. And for those, you know, those in the ceasefire camp, one thing that I would suggest is, if we want to convince people on a ceasefire, we need to say what happens next, because Israelis are not, they want Hamas gone. No matter what, Hamas needs to go. There's no accepting their existence after what they did. So if there's a ceasefire, then what? And if we can't answer the then what, well, then we shouldn't expect many people in Israel to support a ceasefire, because the then what is essential. Are there also people who just hate Muslims, so they support Israel? Is there symmetry there? Yeah, for sure. I mentioned that some people just don't like Israel because of they don't like Jews. Without a doubt, a lot of the pro-Israel people are pro-Israel because they just don't like Muslims, for sure. And I actually think there's a lot of support in India for Israel. I think this is generally where it comes from, because Hindus and Muslims have been at war, and so they see it Israel fighting the same war against Islam. So, yeah. So Promex.me says, on a side note, I usually don't like the phrase anti-Semitic, as I believe we are Semites too. I'd call it anti-Jewish. It's more accurate to those haters. So this is an interesting point. First of all, there's a misconception. There's actually, Semitic is not a classification of people. It's a classification of language that is actually no longer used. So the term Semitic is not even a relevant term anymore. Anti-Semitic, though, has come to be known as synonymous with anti-Jewish. So I do agree that it could create confusion. But when somebody says anti-Semitic, they're not saying you're against all Semitic people, which isn't even a classification of people. They're saying anti-Jewish. Many counter that, say, how can I be anti-Semitic when I myself am Semitic? They're essentially missing the point. They're not understanding the actual definition of the word. So while I agree with you, I think it would require less explanation to just say anti-Jewish. I often actually do describe it that way because I think there's much less to push back on. But generally speaking, anti-Semitic does not mean you're against the Semitic people. It means you're anti-Jewish. Those two terms are synonymous. Dio Brando says, do you think relocation of Palestinians is a viable solution to the conflict despite its inhumaneness? No, I don't think it's viable. I think if it was viable, Israel would maybe try to do it in this instance. The international community, I don't think, would allow it, and they wouldn't take Palestinians in. No, I don't think so. Akas asks, Adar, would you agree to a one-state solution if the Israeli government could maintain the ratio of Israeli-Palestinian Arabs at 80-20% singular, similar to how Singapore maintains the ratio? Yeah, I mean, I would say that's a version of one-state solution that would not lead to massive civil war and bloodshed. So yeah, I think that could work. I mean, Israel currently 20% of Israeli citizens are Palestinian, right? And they're functioning members of society. 50% of doctors in Israel are Palestinian citizens of Israel. You have one serving in the Supreme Court. They're in government, right? So you already have an active Palestinian minority. And by the most part, we live well together. It's not that there's no room for improvement. I mean, there's certainly conflict, you know, because there's the Israel-Palestine conflict. With that comes a lot of Islamophobia, a lot of fear of Arabs. This impacts Israel's minority population. Yesterday, I had an Uber driver by the name of Mohammed, Palestinian citizen of Israel. I asked him how he's doing in these times, if he's feeling the impact of Jewish fear. He says, yeah, without a doubt. He says it's very common for people to cancel the Uber once they see his, it's not Uber, it's Get, it's our version of it. But I'm saying that just so no one tries to call me out for making up this story. But he said that when people see his name Muhammad, they often cancel the ride. And he said this happens even in times of peace sometimes, but it's happening much more now, right? Israelis are scared. They're like, a driver named Muhammad, I don't know if I could trust that person, right? It's Muhammad, good guy. He comes from a town of people who I don't think he describes himself as Zionist, but he identifies as Israeli. He wants to be Israeli. He doesn't want Israel to be dismantled. He has a lot of Jewish friends, and he's struggling now because the amount of fear in Israel amongst Palestinians and Muslims has just increased tremendously, and he feels it. He told me generally day to day, around 10% of the Jewish population, he feels some kind of negative sentiment from, but now that's exploded recently. And again, this is just one anecdote, but this is his experience. And yeah, we see that this can work. I'll give you another anecdote. I just spent a week in the north where my mom lives. I was driving and she just moved apartment, so I didn't know how to get to her place. My phone died while I was driving. So I stopped in an Arab village. And let me give you something about terminology. Palestinian citizens of Israel are generally referred to Arab Israelis here. They're generally not referred to as Palestinians. Some of them, amongst Israeli society, they'll describe themselves as Israeli Arabs. They're not going to take pride in being Palestinian because there's some social backlash to that. But many of them do have some form of Palestinian identity. So when I say an Arab village, what I mean is this is essentially Palestinian citizens of Israel. So this village I stopped in, it's called Tarshicha. It is a mix between Christian and Muslim Arabs. And I stopped at a restaurant, asked if I can charge my phone. Said, do you have an iPhone charger? They're like, of course. Let's get it for you. Do you want to sit inside or outside? Super friendly, super warm. I said, let me sit outside. They brought me the charger outside. They said, you want some coffee on the house? Like, it was just so hospitable, so nice, so generous. And this is not uncommon, right? Especially in Northern Israel. We see harmony and beautiful coexistence between Jewish and Palestinian citizens of Israel. It is a model that can work. XM7LD, anti-Semitism accusations by Israelis are just an excuse to shut down perfectly legitimate criticisms of Israel's state actions. I hear that claim by any Israelis. I know they're avoiding something. So I agree with the most part. I would change this to say, anti-Semitism accusations by Israel's are not just an excuse, are often an excuse to shut down perfectly legitimate criticism. If you hear that claim by Israelis, don't say, I know they're avoiding something, but say they very well may be avoiding something, because anti-Semitism exists. And we even see some of these pro-Palestine marches, people have chanted death to the Jews. They have anti-Semitic imagery. There is certainly an overlap between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism, and we can't deny that. So, you know, let's be a little bit more balanced with how we view this. David Bow Wow goes, anyone know how do we ask Adar questions in this live talk? Just like that, brother. And you know what, guys, we're going to prioritize some super chats. You know, the reason that you could support the show in many ways, right? We have volunteers helping. And if you want to be a volunteer, reach out. And there's ways to support monetarily. One is becoming a patron, which you'll see how to do that in the description. You could join and be a member here on YouTube, and you can give super chats, and we will prioritize super chats. Just so you all know the vision for the channel. I work full time on building a company and community called Grateful Giraffes. You can check it out, gratefulgiraffes.com. It takes up most of my day. I do this really out of passion more than anything else. I would like to hire a team of people to help grow this channel, help book interesting guests, create better thumbnails, do some cool edits, right? There's just so much we could do with a team of people. So any support, any money this channel gets ultimately is going to go to fund expanding the team and continuing doing what we're doing. It's not going to support me getting fancy meals. I have a job. I work. I'm not desperate for the cash, but I'm not in a position where I can hire a full team and pay them out of pocket. So that's where the support comes from. Ron the Red asks, am I in the IDF? I served in the IDF. Yeah. When I came to Israel a few weeks ago, I thought that I might get drafted, but I was not called. So I don't even know if I'm in their system anymore. Justino says, would it be fair to say that if Hamas has to go, do settlers such as Isai Fleischer and other terrorists in the West Bank need to go? Yeah, for sure. I'd want to get rid of all of them. And this doesn't need to mean kill them, but at least take away their power and influence, for sure. And that's true about both sides. Yeah, yeah. We gotta get rid of the extremists. The extremists are successfully pulling the center apart, right? Like, you have the extremists and then you have everyone else. Everyone else, if we could technically come and work together towards a better future and isolate the extremists. But for too long, we've allowed extremists to really dictate the terms, and they've managed to pull the center apart from one another. And it's quite tragic. XM7LD goes, Israeli society is fundamentally racist. People can't work with it. Israel needs to change itself if it wants peace. So I think Israel needs to transform, without a doubt. But I don't think that the notion that Israel being racist is a reason why it can't be worked with. Actually, if you compare Israel's racism to the rest of the Middle East, it's probably less racist than most other Middle Eastern countries, significantly more racist than the average European country or North America. But if you compare it to the Middle East, it's not like we're exceptionally racist over here. And we shouldn't create these false barriers for our ability to work with one another. Any group, any people, there's some way to work with them. Back says, you said confederation. How do you make everyone buy in? Do you think Israelis will need to change their culture, like identifying as Arab Jews, to have a shared identity? What about Palestinians? So I said federation. A federation would be like the United States being a country with many different states within it. A confederation would be more like the European Union. That would be essentially a two-state solution with certain like dual mechanisms, which also could be a good solution. But I specifically mentioned federation. How do we make people buy in? I mean, we need leadership that's talking about this, right? Like we are, both Israelis and Palestinians are plagued by poor leadership, absolutely plagued by it. And there's a serious lack of hope on both sides. Both sides don't have any vision for what a shared future looks like, and there's no leader giving them that shared future, that vision. So a leader that really presents a viable solution towards a shared future would bring it to the public spotlight, and people would likely buy into it, because we don't want to be in conflict anymore. Neither side wants to be in conflict. So that's the kind of solution we would buy into. We just need better leaders. In terms of what we can do is just talk about it, right? This stream, tweeting about it. Like, if you believe in a federation, tell more people about it. That's really the way to start to change public opinion. Damn, I just noticed we're going on. I had a dinner planned for tonight, but it seems like I missed it. Time flies when you're having fun, I guess. I'll do three more questions and then we're going to wrap it up. We will prioritize super chats. We covered Syrian girls' profile. I'm going to do another live stream where we're going to do like some pro-Israel activists like Ellie David. We'll cover Jackson Hinkle. There's so much cringe out there. We just got caught up with these questions. Wise Shepherd goes, how to choose between this and I-24 stream? I'm flattered. And you chose the right one. Thank you. You see, XM7LD, here's just where you're missing the mark. It's not fear that the taxi driver is experiencing. It's racism. It's Jew supremacy. It's hatred. Generally, racism comes from fear. It's not created in a vacuum. Okay, so generally speaking, things changed after October 7th. But generally speaking, Israelis are not taught to hate Palestinians, and they don't hate Palestinians. But they're taught to fear them, and then history and experience reinforces this fear they have. When you fear somebody, you're going to start acting differently towards them. That could be described as racism. I'm okay with that. But understanding the root of something is important if you want to fix it. If you're just quick to label it as hate, it's almost like you look at it as like inherently malicious and evil, and it needs to be eradicated. But how do you eradicate hate? Are you suggesting violence? If you could see the core of the racism is fear, well, we could look at ways to eradicate fear, and then you defeat racism. So being honest and accurate and reflective on the cause of what you perceive as racism is going to be essential to solving that racism. Oh, I realized I didn't respond to part of the previous question. Should Israelis identify as Arab Israelis? That's not going to happen. It's not realistic, but there are ways for Israel to be more inclusive. You know, we should be teaching Arabic in schools. All Israelis should speak Arabic as a second language. We should learn more about Palestinian history, the Palestinian narrative. This should also be part of the school system. Maybe we should create some shared holidays together, really build this beautiful, cohesive society together. Kamel goes, Adar, love your work, man. Love your work, not man. Sorry. Love your work. May I ask, have you discussed Caspian Report videos before? I would like to get your insight on this. No, I don't even know what that is. Please send it over. And thanks for the support, Kamel. Let's see. Adar, is there any politician you think is interested in a fair solution? I think a lot of like the left-wing candidates from like the Labor Party for Meretz, Ram, which is the Palestinian Islamist Party. I think generally they, you know, if you ask them, they will be able to give you solutions that are just. And again, you could call this bias because those are the parties I'm more likely to support. I mean, I don't support the Islamist Party. I support them being in government because I think it's important representation. But, you know, I'm clearly, you know, secular, so I don't support them for ideological reasons. But yeah, I think those parties generally have, have a better vision for what a fair solution looks like. Cool. I think we think we're going to wrap it up. Thank you all for tuning in. Hopefully we have Muhammad sometime this week. I'll update you all. Yeah, final thoughts, you know, tough times, challenging times. Do not let the extremists pull you to their side. Remember that the majority of people are not extremists. Their voices just aren't amplified as much. And every single person here has the ability to impact those around them. So you could bring people closer to the middle. You could bring people closer towards an understanding of the other side. And the more people we have who are understanding and empathetic towards the other side, the closer we are towards reaching peace. So in times of despair, never forget your ability to impact those around you. Sending much love.